everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to find the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, please go to pnwa.org. All right, it's March. In April, I will be speaking down in Portland on the 1st of April. In the old church there in Portland at 7 p.m. It's the Willamette Writers Portland Bureau. And if you want to come hear me talk about fearless writing, head on down there. I'll be there. Otherwise, not too much going on this month. But today, you know, you may not actually know it listening to this show, but I am a sucker for love stories. It's true. Particularly... true love stories. In fact, if I ever corner you at a party, it's very likely I will tell you my true love story. But well, anyway, part of the reason I'm thrilled to have our guest on today is she has a true love story that she has chronicled in her debut book, a memoir. Patience Bloom, in addition to being, well, in addition to having a fabulous name, also in addition to writing her first memoir, is, and this is the interesting part of the story, an editor, a senior editor of a romantic suspense line at Harlequin. Yes, and she's written about finding true love. Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction, as she will surely tell you. Patience, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Bill. Hi, everybody.
Hello out there in internet world. Patience, first of all, your name is Patience Bloom. You didn't make that
up. It's real. It's real. It's not a fake name.
That is amazing.
I thought that... when I got married, how could I resist having that last name?
Because your last name had been Smith.
Right.
Which is perfect.
I mean, not that Smith. No, but I just decided, why not change at 42?
Well, it's a great name for especially a romance editor and an author of a true love story. So I really loved this book. And
as
I said in my intro, I'm a sucker for a love story, but also a theme in my life is the difference. And actually, this is a funny story, Patience, and I'm going to get to you.
Okay.
Don't worry. But when
no,
I had my, when I had my one time, I wrote about this in a blog recently, but when I had my charts done, the one time I had my chart done in my life by an amateur astrologer, she said, your number one challenge in life is going to be to tell the difference between fantasy and reality. Now, does this ring a bell with you?
Yeah, just a little bit.
All right, so the story begins really with your love, in part with your love of romance novels. This is the same year you meet your would-be husband is the same year you discover the romance, Harlequin. Is that right? Am I getting my
exactly.
math right?
Exactly. It's about right. I started reading Harlequin romances when I was about 14, and I loved them. I devoured them. It was a nice contrast to all the studying I did, math and Latin and French, and it helps me study. They're educational, I would say.
They relax your mind.
Exactly. And make you feel good. So I just continued reading them, not exactly as voraciously as some romance readers, but they definitely gave me a boost. And then, you know, then those adolescent hormones set in. And that combined with reading romance novels, I mean, that's kind of a heady combination.
Yes, so they had you yearning.
It yes.
must have had you yearning. But yeah. So teach me this. This is, I've always find this interesting. There's so many different types of books in the world. Why do romance novels make you feel good? I know this sounds like an obvious answer, but not everybody reads romance. So why do they make you feel so good?
I think it's the emotional conflict and the romantic tension. You root for people who for some reason can't get together, and yet they finally do at the end. It's sort of an ability to overcome all these obstacles, and they really develop characters pretty well, and you sort of, they're sort of like a surrogate for real life in some ways.
Well, they take the real life experience of the, mm-hmm. the what and just exaggerate it and just take it and
exactly
sort of blow it up so you can really feel it. You can really feel it.
Yeah, and I think the stories really make you feel good. There's always a happy ending, and I think readers identify with the different experiences that some of these characters go through. You know, with loss of parents, you know, disease, different heartbreak, all kinds of different issues.
So. You know what also is a theme in these books I find again and again, in almost every mm-hmm. love story, but certainly in the women's fiction that I've read, is mm-hmm. a sense of an awareness of you. I mean, this is sort of the Cinderella story to some degree, but the sort of mm-hmm. blossoming of your own awareness of your beauty and your value and your, like, I matter, I exist, I'm here, I've been recognized, I've been seen, I'm not the nothing I suspected I might be. Does that ring true also?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing too is that the idea that you are perfect the way you are. It's I mean, granted, a lot of the characters in romance novels are incredibly gorgeous, as you see on the cover, but
right.
I think if you read a lot of them, they're not exactly the most, they're not all supermodels. I would say a
right.
lot of them aren't. So I like that, and I think a lot of people do.
So, all right. So this book, I'll tell you, patience, by the time we get to part 3 or 4, I can't remember it is, when you get a Facebook message, really, really, really wanted you to meet someone you were going to have. And what's funny about this book is that for the readers, pick it up if you love a good story. It's so much fun to read, and you tell it with great humor.
Thank you.
Is that there's the fantasy life of you become an editor in your 20s, in your late 20s? When did you become the
late
editor?
20s.
Okay.
It was my second career.
Right, after teaching, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's the romance novels, and you always, you'd have this wonderful technique of comparing either a classic romance story or a book like one of Emily Giffen's or a movie like or Working Girl, and comparing your own life to this, and comparing mm-hmm. the fantasy versus the reality. And you were living in reality. There is no doubt about that, a dating reality. And you take us through all that, and then finally you meet, well, I'm not going to spoil it, but what prompted you to write this book? So what was that decision like?
Well, I accidentally wrote this book as a stress reliever before my wedding. Well, a version of this book. I did that, the NaNoWriMo, the national, the write a
you
book in
did?
A month challenge.
I, oh
that
my
was
God.
My, it was supposed to be a novel, but it wound up being 75% of romance is my day job.
Wow.
Just to relieve a little stress 2 months before my wedding. And I put it aside, and then I decided, well, maybe I'll rewrite this as fiction, because I don't think anybody would really believe this story, because it really is a romance. And a year and a half after that, I met with an agent for Harlequin Business, and at the very end of our meeting, I was telling him the story of why I was a newlywed, and his eyes lit up, and he said, "You have to write this book, and I'm going to represent you." So, and that's how it really happened.
All right.
Then I had to rewrite it.
So then you had to sit down, and because it had been done in fiction, it was written in a fictional.
Yes.
Okay.
There are three versions of this story now.
Now, you know, so there, what. You know, for the memoirist, it seems to me, and that's mm-hmm. what I write now, there's always what you know when you sit down to write. And for me, every time, there is something different that I know when I'm done writing it. even though I lived it. Did you have that experience with this? In going back over your life in this way? Well, in other words, you sit down to write and you know what's happened to you and you've got your, but then you write the thing and usually something is learned in the writing of that that in a way you didn't understand until you wrote it.
One thing that was very powerful for me is that I all through my dating experience, even starting from when I was, 15 or 16, I had this perception of myself as this sad, clingy, desperate girlfriend. And there was a little truth to that, where you're sort of waiting by the phone all the time. As I was writing that part of the memoir, all the way through my 30s, I actually came to love that person, you know, the person who really fights for what she wants and is very determined. I didn't like that person as I was experiencing that.
Right.
So I came to terms with that.
Yeah, you know what? And this is so typical of what happens in the memoir, is you have to – you understand that up to a point you've been living with a story about your life, not your life, but simply a story you told. So sad, clingy, waiting by the, that's a story. It's not reality. You may have been sad. You may have clung. You may have waited by the phone at some point, but that doesn't mean that that's what you were.
It was just one part. Yeah. That was another thing I learned, is that there was a whole lot that isn't in that didn't make it into the memoirs. And I realized that, and even my brother, as he was reading it, he said, "You left a whole lot out." And it just showed us that everybody has a very complex story in general.
Oh, yeah.
So that was quite a lesson too.
I always say that with the fiction writer starts with nothing and creates everything. And then the memoir starts with everything and reduces down to something, because you can't even get close. What's interesting about this story as you told it too, is you must be familiar with the classic hero's journey narrative arc. And always at about 2/3, especially in traditional Hollywood film now, ever since Star Wars, I guess, there's a death moment, right? Right.
Yeah.
Somehow or another, death is insinuated. But even you had that moment in a way at your birthday party.
Yes.
And it showed up just right on time, right on schedule for this narrative, when you said screw it.
Yeah.
It wasn't death, but in a way it was a kind of death of, I don't want to ruin it for everybody, but there reached a point where you said, I'm 40 years old, I'm not married, maybe I got to just say screw it.
Yeah, and that was a relief too. It just
was it.
You know, you don't have to do what everybody does. You don't have to you don't have to fulfill this expectation of marriage and dating. I'll just do nothing.
it was
a death, and you know, it wasn't also. It was kind of a relief in a way.
It was a death of an idea of what you were supposed to be, perhaps.
Yeah.
As opposed to what, you know what it reminded me of, ironically enough, do you know Jane Porter?
Oh, she wrote This Is 40?
That's correct, but she wrote a lot of books, and she still writes for Harlequin, and she wrote a lot of them. And her story I thought it was Harlequin she wrote for.
I just saw one of her books is in a movie, and I saw it's not This Is 40, but it has to do with
that was a
40.
Yeah, there was
Flirting with 40.
Yes. Well, she has two lines. She has her thing with, I forget who publishes those trade paperbacks, but then she also started at Harlequin. She started in the romances, and I think she still writes, as a matter of fact, whether it's Jane Porter, she may use a different name. But yeah, she wrote like 18 books for Harlequin first, and she had been toiling away. She had 15 or 16 rejections, and she said to herself, you know what? I'm going to be doing this until I'm 80, regardless of whether they ever say yes. So... Mm-hmm. Who cares? And a week later, she got her first acceptance letter.
Yeah, that's amazing.
There was that sort of giving up on this one thing. That's the first thing I thought of when I read that scene. I thought of old Jane and her giving up on, or realizing she wasn't going to give up almost.
And she's flourishing. I mean, she's...
Yeah. Oh, she's doing great. Yeah. She's a busy woman. All right. So then you sat down to write this thing. What was that like? Was it unnerving? Did you enjoy it? How was it?
I really enjoyed it. I'd been writing off and on for years, decades, and this was kind of interesting because there was an actual contract attached to it. So I knew I had to do it. I knew I was going to do it, and I'm generally pretty disciplined about meeting deadlines. So the hard part was making it good and revising and rewriting, and that was very rewarding and very challenging at the same time.
Were you rewriting? So what an interesting job. You're an editor now. Did you, and who published it? I didn't even notice who published it.
Oh, Dutton.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So did you do the rewriting all along with the editor at Dutton, or did you do it mostly on your own and then give it to the editor?
First of all, the agent that I worked with was a very good editor as well. So he helped me from the beginning to keep going back and to not hand in my first draft.
Okay.
So it's usually my third draft that I gave to my editor, and she was great. She had notes on every, on the different pages she definitely held my hand through the process and helped me a lot. So I definitely needed an editor.
You needed an editor because
yes.
you'd been writing off and on, but had you ever finished a full project like this before?
Oh, I'd finished many full projects. I think the difference here was that I was really going back and rewriting and making sure every part worked.
Yeah.
I hadn't done that before.
As an editor, you hadn't done that? I would have thought that as the editor and you would have been going back and back over your work prior to that.
Well, the problem was that when you're just writing for yourself, you want to publish, but you have to be your own editor. You take as much time as you want, and I have to admit I didn't work as hard. But with this book and with the idea that a lot of people would read it, I really just scrutinized the entire manuscript. And it was great. It taught me a big lesson.
Did it?
Yeah.
Well,
just to be careful and to be even more careful than I was before and to go over everything.
Well, I'll tell you, the interesting, you use the word careful, and I understand why. And mm-hmm. this book had a very, very easy voice to it. It wasn't, if you were scrutinized it, you didn't pull all the energy out of it. So, congratulations, at least from this reader's point of view. And so it was very funny and it had a real lightness to it. Was that something that just came naturally to you, or did you decide I wanted to have it have a kind of have that tone of a little bit of humor, a light touch, or was that just what came natural?
That came naturally. I think, in general, my brain is that voice.
Is it?
Yeah, for the most part.
All right, good.
15 years old.
is that what that is?
Probably.
All right, so what was the hardest part for you to get? What was the hardest thing for you to learn besides the being willing to go back into it? Was it what to put in and what not to put in? What was the hardest aspect of it?
There's some difficult moments in the book, and delving into family issues wasn't exactly a carefree experience, and figuring out what to write about that, and also just some traumatic occurrences in my 20s and how much information to put there. That was difficult because ultimately it's not about airing dirty laundry so much as maybe somebody who's gone through something similar, maybe having that person see that they're not alone. I mean, that was more on my mind than anything.
Yeah, the memoir is an interesting thing because it's a story about you, but ultimately it's like when I teach memoir, I always say it's not actually about you. I mean, you are a protagonist in the story, but it's really in service to the reader and what they will take away from it. It can't be about patience in the small p. It has to be about you as what you understood about life, really, in the end. Not your victories and defeats and so on.
Yeah. But it's mostly a story. It's a story about hope and not giving up.
That's right, which is not about you. Hope and not giving up is life, and this is how you learned it, and that's the gift you're trying to give people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. We have a caller. I believe Jeffrey, another interviewer on it. Jeffrey, is that you?
It is I, Bill. I hope you're having a good day. Another incredible interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I must publicly apologize to patients for not calling it back in high school. I'm humbly sorry.
Wait. Jeff, do I know you?
No, patient. Okay, to get back to Jeffrey.
Oh, I get it. It's okay.
I'm also, Bill said, an interviewer, but a writer and an editor. I wondered if... And this has been a quandary for me forever and probably still will be, to take the editor out of the writer when I want to just write something on my own, to not go line editing myself as I'm trying to just create. Do you find that's true as well, and do you have a process? Maybe I can glean from you a process of just exercising that and leaving that aside while I'm just trying to let the words flow.
Oh, good question. Jeffrey, all right, so what do you say?
That's a great question, and I think it's just a matter of just don't do it. don't just force yourself not to go back and to just keep going. Because I mean, if you are always editing, you never move the story forward. I remember it was very hard to write these really fresh chapters without going back to and editing the first two-thirds of the book, but the last three chapters, or at least three chapters of the book, were something I hadn't done before. So it was difficult, but you just do it. I know that's not very profound, but...
Well, so it's difficult because there's a small voice in you saying, perfect it,
yeah.
And you have to turn that voice off.
Yeah, you have to turn it off, just write the chapters, and give yourself the reward at the end where you can go back and look at those chapters.
Yeah, because when you're actually doing the writing, you kind of want to enter the dream state that the writer enters so you can really see the thing, because you have to go back and relive it in order to write it. You have to go there again in some form or another and kind of get lost in it.
Well, yeah, and the other thing you can do is you could do schedule it so you do two kinds of writing. You could do your dream state writing where it's just off the cuff, and then do your editing.
Yeah. So all right, you've got
a double session.
Yes, and in fact, I know a bunch of authors who do that, who break it up like that for themselves. So it's a good strategy. So you've got a stable of authors you work with, including, I forget her name now, the one who's writing, is it Maria, who writes a book a month?
Oh, Marie Farella, yeah. She's pretty incredible.
Good Christ. Oh, my God. Okay.
That's her
whatever.
Therapy.
All right, a book a month. Yeah. All right, and your fairy godmother. And so what has this stable of authors thought about your venture into the publishing world?
Oh, they've been really excited for me. They've, the thing that was... it was funny when I got my first revision, when I got my revision notes, I think I was talking to one of my authors, and Carla Cassidy, and I was saying, revisions are really difficult. And she said, karma's a, rhymes with witch, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd sent her some revisions as well.
You have. So. I was going to say, what a strange experience to have been on the other end all those years, and now to have it flipped. Did it help you think, your experience of being an editor when you started going through that process?
Oh, for sure. I knew to say yes to everything.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
I knew that the editor I knew that she was on my side. Because, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't she be? And yeah. She worked very hard. I'd read books that she'd worked on, and I knew that she was gifted. So it was easy to trust her.
That's great. Well, yeah. And so now you've gone out and you've gone around. Have you done some readings and some appearances and the usual author stuff?
Yes, I have. It's been a lot of fun. A lot of great interviews, and I did a reading at Barnes & Noble, and that was a lot of fun. Although the headmaster of my school was sitting in the second row, that was
what?
A little intimidating.
You mean the old from your prep school that you went to, the
yes.
boarding school?
Yes.
Come on. How strange. All right. Weird, but okay. And so, well, how's it been talking to people about your life? Because here you are before, you are behind the scenes, nobody knows anything about patients, mm-hmm. and suddenly your life is right there for all to read about. What's that like?
Oh, yeah, and some sensitive stuff, too.
Yes, indeed you do.
Well, I sort of feel that it's too late now, but I you know, you can't go back, and I like it, and I like the response from the book, and I've had people say, you know, I went through that too, and that is wonderful. I mean, not wonderful good. That they went through it, but just that, no. you know, it could touch somebody. So
yeah, it's really quite a, I have to say, it's quite a magical thing, the relationship between the author and the reader.
Yeah.
You sort of share with this perfect stranger, and yet you share this sort of strangely intimate bond, don't you?
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's really great.
Yeah.
And
no,
so
I've enjoyed every bit.
Well, so, all right, now, patients, is there any chance we can ever get you out here to the Northwest and attend the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference? We would love to have a Harlequin editor sitting
oh,
here.
Oh, that would be fun.
Oh, we
yeah.
get all kinds of great editors. You could come out as an author and as an editor, which is a great
oh,
combo.
That would be neat. Yeah. I haven't been to the Pacific Northwest.
It's a biggie, and it's really good. So, all right, we're gonna get you out here then. All right, so listen, I got about a minute left. So, what
okay.
I'd like you to do is finish this sentence for me. You ready?
Uh-huh.
Are you ready? Okay. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you?
Taught me to seek a different channel than I would have expected. I was very devoted to writing fiction, and this kind of came out of the blue. So that's what I would invite other writers to do, is to sort of look at something they hadn't explored before.
It expanded your horizons a little bit, didn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. As it should, really. Well, patience,
yeah.
congratulations. A,
oh, thank you.
Writing through love. I'm so happy
thank
for you.
You.
And and I'm writing a book about it. It's just awesome.
Oh, great.
And again, I hope we can get you out here sometime, and we can sit on a panel and talk about love and memoir.
Oh, that would be great.
All right. Well, good
so
luck,
much.
Patience. All right. Take it easy.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Yes, she's absolutely right. Bye-bye. Yes, she's absolutely right. New horizons, because writing is a journey of discovery. I don't care if you're writing about your life or somebody else's. I don't care if you're writing suspense or romance or literary fiction or poetry. Journey of discovery. And even though you're writing about something you love, when you go right into something you love, you discover more of what you love. And what could be better than that? It's like James Joyce said, love, loved, loves to love. So do what you love. Love who you love. Love where you are. Go wrong. Until next time.